Let me guess. You're gonna pound my face, break every bone in my body, then you're gonna drag me across the gravel road and feed my remains to a warthog. Is that about right?
What are you, nuts? We're gonna sue you. We're gonna get you for willful destruction of property.
Yeah.
Mental anguish.
That's giving it to him.
Loss of work hours. We get through with you, you ain't gonna have a dime left to your name.
What kind of world is this?
Hi, this is Mike.
This is Daryl.
This is also Mike, and you are listening to Forgotten Failures, the podcast where we watch obscure movies and decide whether they should be forgotten and obscure or if they're worth watching.
So, sounds about right.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
We always do that. We always say the same thing, and then we're like, okay.
Yeah,
okay, that sounds all right.
That's good enough.
We're constantly critiquing ourselves. Yeah, that's how you get better.
Can't we just have a script?
Yeah, but then that kills the moment, man. We don't want a script.
Yeah, so it's an organic process.
Yeah. It's forever changing.
It's emergent.
It's all jazz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So today we're going to watch the 1991 movie Suburban Commando.
Yep. This is your pick.
Yes, this is my pick. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's completely forgotten. Especially maybe in some circles, people would, you know, it's got Hulk Hogan in it, so there's definitely that appeal to it.
Well, in the Hulkster circles.
Yeah, in the
Hulkamania, there's never a time where Hulkamania is not.
But it was
definitely
a failure. box office wise. Mm-hmm. The budget was $11 million and it only grossed $8 million, so that's not very good as far as movies go, especially when the budget's that low.
Yeah.
I mean, given this is the early 90s, but still.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, you know, the early 90s, an $11 million movie, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be higher than the budget of Look Who's Talking or Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. But so this stars Hulk Hogan, Christopher Lloyd, and Shelley Duvall, and crowd favorite, what's his name? Larry Miller. Larry Miller makes an appearance.
Larry
in this
Miller
movie.
Is returns for the first time since episode one of Forgotten Failures.
Yeah. He's a crowd favorite. Everybody loves that guy. But I recently just found this out from diving in while I was killing some time today, that this movie was originally titled Urban Commando, and it was optioned for Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger to play the Christopher Lloyd and Hulk Hogan parts. But they signed on to do Twins instead, and then they sold this script to a different company, and they changed it to Suburban Commando. And
so in Urban Commando, was he going to be in the inner city and get involved in gangs instead of suburban kids?
Yeah, that I don't know. Maybe that part of the plot had changed, but like I said, I don't know the original plot. Hmm. It just that was a nice little tidbit of information. I was like, oh, that would be a completely different movie, I feel like.
Yeah, oh, completely. I never would have expected that.
No.
So I guess as we watch this, we'll just judge, like, would a Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger team up made this better? Or, you know, should they have just stuck with the Twins?
Yeah, for sure.
By the way, they should not have stuck with the Twins.
Twins is a great movie.
It's a great
movie.
Thing that was... it was a great thing
Hold
that was
your
filmed.
Tongue. Hold your tongue.
Yeah. Well, for my whole life, I thought this was a movie that's just like another one of those tough guy has to take care of kids movies. Like... The Tooth Fairy, starring Vin Diesel, or the one that had that was with The Rock, The Pacifier, starring Vin Diesel.
Yeah,
I think this was just like Hulk Hogan's Kindergarten Cop, but
well, Hulk Hogan had one. It was called Mr. Nanny.
Yeah, that's right. I thought this was like his other movie like that.
His other Mr. Nanny.
Apparently, he's not just a tough guy in this. I just watched the trailer. He's actually some sort of intergalactic superhero, which with superpowers, and that makes it a little more interesting to me.
Yeah,
just a little.
It's much more like sci-fi. It's like sci-fi meets suburban comedy. It's a weird movie. As far
as
I remember,
it's like Earth Girls Are Easy meets Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah, I could see that.
That's a great mashup.
I haven't watched this movie since around the time probably it came out on VHS or something. It was probably like 92-ish maybe. Mm. Who knows? But I was probably 9 or 10 when I saw this, and that was the last time I saw it. So it's been a while. I don't really remember much except for there's some other, I won't spoil it for right now, but there are some other wrestlers that make appearances in this movie.
Oh,
boy.
Yes.
And Sergeant Slaughter? Mr. Perfect?
You'll have to see. But so I'm definitely looking forward to watching this movie just because I liked it a lot when I was younger. And I foresee me liking it maybe even more today just because I'm guaranteed it's going to be more ridiculous than I remember it being. So what do you think, Daryl?
Oh, I'm already expecting to be ridiculous. I didn't know that there was a sci-fi element to it. I was just, you know, expecting the Hulkster to just like body slam some children. That would have been enough for the ticket price right there. But I guess I looking at the cover, I vaguely remember seeing it at like video stores when I was younger, and you know, never investigating it. And I'm glad that I didn't, because now I get to go in this with fresh eyes.
Yeah.
And there you go. You know, other wrestling cameos. Oh, I'm all pumped about that.
Nice.
Will Irwin R. Scheisser be in this movie?
Who the hell is that? I don't remember who that guy is.
Or the million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase.
Ted DiBiase. That's a good one.
The Legion of Doom.
The Legion of Doom. Ric Flair's robe and stuff was, last time I was at the Smithsonian down in D.C. It was being worn by
Lincoln in the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah, it was on display in like the American History Smithsonian or something like that. It was pretty sweet.
That's great.
I was like, woo!
Yep.
And over here, you can see Ric Flair's. Yeah. This is a piece of Americana right here.
Rolling it up.
Here's the pen used to sign the Treaty of Versailles. Yeah. And here's the Ric Flair section.
You'll notice that there's some disparity between how big the Ric Flair section is and, yeah, you know, the stupid pen that's over here that no one knows what it's about. But
yeah.
That's all good. So what do you think, Mike?
Oh, yeah. Fun? Well, your movies are always like the crowd pleasers, I think. It's like most of us come in and we're like, I've vaguely heard of this, or we have to watch this because it has Pauly Shore in it.
Yeah, that's true.
But you can come in and say, I haven't seen this movie in 20 years, and it's pretty stupid, so I think it'll be good.
Yeah, yeah, it's always fun.
So that's a good formula, so I'm looking forward to this.
It's my favorite formula. With that and the lack of Lindsay. Yeah.
Sorry, no Lindsay.
Yeah, she's been thrown in jail again for crimes against misogynists.
So let's do a very manly, let's do it.
Yeah.
Well, you gotta work. Like that, let's do it. Dad, get a grip.
Tell your mom I'll be right in.
Okay.
It's a nice place to live.
But I wouldn't want to visit.
Such a nice place to live.
Nah.
It's a nice place to live.
But I wouldn't want to visit.
Such a nice place to live.
Nah.
Get ready to party. That's what I'm saying. Get up, get your body swim. Madonna, Lombada, Sadonna, they wanna be there. Yo, it ain't what you are, it's what you wear.
Oh, Charlie, good, we gotta talk. How are we gonna pay all these bills? Charlie!
All right, welcome back.
Yes.
Welcome back, riders. Whoa.
Whoa.
Hey, tacos, who wants campers? We just watched Suburban Commando.
Oh,
starring Hulk Hogan, Shelley Duvall, Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men, and The Undertaker.
And Larry Miller.
Yeah.
And a bunch of kids that I remembered having a much bigger part when I was younger.
Well, yeah, when you're a kid, you just assume the kids have bigger parts because that's who you identify with.
Those kids were totally useless. They didn't need to be in this movie at all.
No, not at all.
Outside of Hulk Hogan grabbing a skateboard and from one of the kids
and throwing it into outer space.
I cannot believe how little the kids were in this movie.
Yeah.
For a kid's movie, you're supposed to identify much more with Shelley Duvall than you do with the kids.
Yeah.
I don't know if his son ever got a single line unless he was one of the kids with the skateboards.
I don't think he was. Outside of being chased down by the car, I don't think he was ever really seen on a skateboard.
Yeah, not really. I mean, at the end, that's about it.
Yeah.
Well, let's give our reviews.
All right. Before we get a little too carried away.
Yeah, get into the Hulkamania.
All right.
I just feel it bursting through my veins.
I'll make mine short and sweet. I'll go to the top. This movie was just as awesome as I remember it being. The comedy held up much better than I was expecting. There was some funny stuff where we were laughing along over here. As far as that goes, it's fun. I recommend watching it. Like I said, I'm going to make that short and sweet. So what do you think, Daryl?
Oh, yeah. Definitely recommend watching it. I feel like I missed out on this in my childhood by not seeing this. The comedy surprisingly stood up very well. It was very funny. There were lots of silly things about, you know, just suburban life and being alive in that unfortunate time period called the 90s. It was very good. And, you know, I understand the special effects budget was like just like practically non-existent, but they made it work. And, you know, the practical effects were also kind of cool. I did notice that some of them were borrowed from other movies. Most notably the PKE meter, which they were using as a tracking device at one point. It's definitely the Ghostbuster PKE meter. I had to check it out. It was.
Yeah. Side note, he brought it up on his phone while we were watching. It was almost the exact same thing. I think I had like a spray paint job.
Yeah. Wow. But I mean, other than that, the movie, it stood up well. I would recommend watching it. I'd recommend watching it with people. It's definitely a great movie. Here we rate like great on a curb, but still, it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah.
Mike.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's a great movie. I think maybe it seems great because it's so much better than Bullseye and Martians Go Home. But I can't give it the same rating as Bullseye, so I'm going to have to go with watch it as well. Because it has some funny moments in it. It's funny to see Christopher Lloyd in this as somehow a much younger man than he was in Back to the Future several years earlier. Also a mad scientist, but this time an actual father instead of just a father figure. So yeah, and it has one moment that was really, really funny. It involved bending a iron rod. That was by far the funniest moment. So
that was pretty good.
That was.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah,
but now let's get to it.
Yeah, let's get back to the kids.
Wait, I mean, I was talking about the Mike D. Break D, but if you want to talk about kids the whole time, I'm fine with that.
No, the kids take about 1 second of the plot.
Also, I think we're going to draw in a completely different crowd if we keep talking about children during this podcast.
What are the kids up to these days?
You're saying the kids nowadays aren't going to listen to people talking about Suburban Commando?
No, I'm just saying that there's probably people out there listening for podcasts that talk about children, and I don't want to associate with those podcasts.
Sorry. Well,
and with that fart,
let's get ready.
Let's get the Mike D. Break D going.
This is a story all about how Hulk Hogan is an intergalactic soldier of fortune, or maybe just a soldier who is sent out of a spaceship by the evil General Souter and ends up on Earth. And he just spends about half an hour just wandering around suburbia, encountering stereotypical things, and then he lives in the shed of Christopher Lloyd, who is playing Rick Moranis, and his wife and their two children. The two children don't do anything, as we said earlier. It is amazing that it is entirely focused on Christopher Lloyd / Rick Moranis. And he has a bad boss, played by Larry Miller. He can't ask his boss for a raise, blah, blah, blah. Hulk Hogan gives himself confidence. He takes Hulk Hogan's armor and uses it to defeat rapists and... He finds Hulk Hogan's blaster, and Hulk Hogan and him team up to get the incredibly valuable gems that Larry Miller owns that Hulk Hogan needs to power his spacecraft to take it back into space. And eventually they do that, and they destroy General Souter, and Hulk Hogan flies away with Larry Miller's secretary. The end.
That's the general synopsis.
Yeah, you got it.
No, General Souter.
General David Souter.
I see what you did there. Yeah, so let's get back to these kids.
Yeah, so the children.
Well, you can't even tell whether the kid is in a scene.
Yes. Yeah. And there was multiple kids that kind of looked like Christopher Lloyd's kid.
Yeah.
Because he was the most generic boy.
Yes, but there was multiple generic boys that kept popping up.
They like just called for casting. They're boys, we need boys.
Well, white boys.
There's multiple scenes where Hulk Hogan interacts with like a young child boy. And there was easily a way to do this to where it was like the child every time, like Christopher Lloyd's child.
Like, I just kept thinking, is that Christopher Lloyd / Rick Moranis' son? Or is that just some other kid? Is that the same kid we saw earlier?
And most of the time it isn't. Like, they go to the arcade and it's not his kid. And they go to the skateboard thing and it's not his kid again, when it easily should have been his kid every time.
Yes.
Yeah, and the older sister does even less, although we see her first. Yeah,
that's true. And she has, like, a speaking line, and I mean, like, a line.
Yeah. They get lifted at the beginning.
So this is one of those, about like, supposed kids movies where it's just all about adult concerns, like Marmaduke, which is mostly about how Marmaduke's owner, like, needs to convince his boss not to force him to move to California or something.
I don't know if I ever saw Marmaduke.
Oh, man, it's pretty bad. And this is, like, all these... supposed kids movies are all about how the dad needs to get up the courage to ask his boss for a raise.
Yeah.
And needs to succumb to his wife's seduction efforts.
Yeah. That's a hot button ticket in kids' philosophy. Like, they're at home, you know, they're eating Cheerios and watching cartoons, and they're like, I really hope dad gets the balls to ask for that raise today.
Also, I wonder if mom's going to try to fuck dad on the couch tonight. Yeah.
I wonder if mom's going to show up and covering every inch of her body with several robes and wearing a red Cher fright wig to try to seduce dad.
Yeah, that's my ticket to a nice afternoon after school.
Well, yeah, you know, you get home from school, you know, you do your, you know, routine, you mm-hmm. go to bed, you're reading a book, and you're just like, man, I hope dad's getting some.
Yeah.
Hope mom's putting the moves on dad tonight.
Hope he got that raise so we can really stick it to mom.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to get so many baseball cards so I can look at them while my parents bang in the next room.
Oh, man. So this movie kind of starts off with Shep Ramsey. He's flying around in outer space. We get introduced to him, and he's kicking ass. And the Hulkster, when he's Shep Ramsey and he's intergalactic fighting, he likes to whip out the quips when he's fighting.
Yeah.
Like, it's always like, going down, and then he punches the guy down downstairs or something.
Yeah, that's kind of his move. He either sends people through the ceiling or through the floor.
Yeah, that's a reoccurring theme in this movie. And all the bad guys on the spaceship have ponytails.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And they look like they're fake ponytails. Like, it's like a helmet with a ponytail coming out. They were very weird.
Yeah, and noticeable.
Yes.
Because, you know, first of all, like, the opening scene, if you've never seen the movie Star Wars, I hear it's kind of popular. Like, people...
It was.
Shut up.
Like 38 years ago. Come on, Grandpa.
Sorry, I know.
38 years ago. Yeah, go ahead.
One of those years, like, you know, the intro gives you that, like, you know, I was thinking like Star Wars, but then when like the ship kept going, I was like, oh, maybe more like Spaceballs.
Yeah.
But when you get into the ship, it's like, all right, well, I kind of know where this came from. Yeah. Even the music is slightly—it's like a slightly tweaked version of like the Star Wars.
Just
theme.
There, though. Nowhere else in the movie.
Yeah, that's the only one.
They have the heroic music when Hulk Hogan appears and starts whooping ass.
Yeah, yeah.
And then later in the movie, I'm pretty sure they use the same heroic music when Christopher Lloyd finally does something brave and drives his car into the garage and runs over Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I think so too. And just like classic Hulkster of WWF fame, he pulls the great comeback moves, like where you think he's going down mm-hmm. and then, you know, he somehow gets that extra energy and rises to the occasion. And he does that on this spaceship, but not before... Or maybe it is before, but either way. So he does that and starts beating some bad dudes up again. But the General Suter is, I guess, his arch nemesis, at least in this movie. Maybe he's got other ones.
But I think there's they're not at the same level. Because Hulk Hogan is just like a James Bond type, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah,
and General Suter is, I don't know, like a ruler of a galaxy or something.
Yeah, like Darth Vader.
Yeah, basically.
Dark Helmet.
But he also, when General Suter... can transform into a creature from the Black Lagoon slash Predator type thing.
Yeah, very much like Swamp Thing Predator or something like that.
Which, by the way,
we get a tease of it in the beginning where he gets his hand like chopped off.
And it comes out of like the hand stump.
Yeah, and then he gets like alien hand.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. And then
and you don't see the whole alien, so you think, no. Oh man, it's going to be really scary.
Yep.
Like a alien tease.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, near the end, we do see the whole alien, and it's just a guy in a rubber suit. And much smaller than Suter was himself, where I thought it was going to be a giant alien.
Well, I mean that kind of makes sense. I mean, he's wearing, like, the General Suter skin suit, so he's got to be smaller than the skin suit.
Yeah, just like Lawrence Limburger.
Just
you know,
like
from
Lawrence
Biker Mice from Mars?
Just like
that took
Lawrence
me a second.
Limburger.
I was like, Lawrence Limburger. Oh,
the space fish cheese guy?
Yeah, exactly like that.
Exactly.
And Suter moves. He's got some great moves. He does like a lot of hands up in the air, just kind of waving them like he just don't care.
Yep.
And it looks really silly because he does it a lot at the end. I mean, most of his movements are just like,
yeah, when he first appeared, I thought he was Larry Miller. He looks like Larry Miller, but
he does a little bit.
Yeah.
He's like the poor man's Larry Miller.
And I looked this guy up. The guy who plays Suter is a guy named William Ball, who is a very, very acclaimed avant-garde theater director.
Oh.
And this was his only movie role, as far as I can tell, except for tiny, tiny bit parts.
That's crazy.
Is in this, I cannot even imagine. It's like when that guy appeared in Poltergeist 2 as the evil preacher. Remember him?
Yeah.
Like, that guy was, like, hardly in any movies. Somehow they got him to play that great role.
Maybe he was, like, trying to open a new theater somewhere, and then he was like, hey, I need some cash. Let me just do this shitty little movie, and I'll get some money, and then I'll go back to my theater life.
Yeah, he saw the script, and he said, villain character says every possible villain cliche line you could ever imagine.
Yeah, why not?
I have this to do
speaks
this.
To me.
When stuff like that comes up, Kraut, like, I get the feeling that people, not, while they don't take it, not like, some probably take it not seriously, but I think it's just like, yeah, it's an easy paycheck.
I get to say things like, this endless cat and mouse grows tiresome, Ramsay. I wonder how I'm going to kill you.
Oh, man. Yeah, so after all that goes down, and Shep blows up the plane, up the spaceship.
And he does not save the president. He fails in his mission.
Yeah, well, it's sometimes you gotta lose to win, you know?
Yeah. Also, it's a president of some other planet, so
who cares? No one cares. So then Shep gets the news from, I don't know who it is. It's like his leader or his boss or something.
It's Roy Dotrice.
Yeah.
Which I thought we had seen another movie with Roy Dotrice in it, but I guess we didn't.
Ah.
But the Dotrice name has some staying power for the Forgotten Failures. His daughter was the daughter in the Gnomemobile.
Oh, wow.
So that's the connection there.
I thought I recognized that name.
Yeah.
I was like, I know I've said this name before, and I haven't seen any other movies that he's been listed in. So after some digging, all of our Forgotten Failures fans. Yeah. Yes.
You will remember this girl from the Gnomemobile and a less popular movie called Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I don't care.
A far
about
less popular movie.
Yeah.
Almost unmentionable.
Yeah, so this guy tells Shep, you need to go on holiday. You've been breaking things and killing people and all this stuff. And then Shep goes to Earth because it's a nice place to live, but, you know, he doesn't really want to visit.
Yeah.
But
that classic J-Rock song.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Says the,
was that
says
the
classic song.
The hip-hop song?
Yeah.
That was such a terrible song, and it came out of nowhere.
That was an amazing song.
You take that back.
And it was such a bad song that, like, when the rapper stopped rapping and suddenly Shelley Duvall started talking, I legitimately thought it was a really bad female rapper, like, rapping during the song.
Oh, man. And then Hulk Hogan even had a little, like, singing part as well.
Yeah. It was featuring the Hulkster.
Featuring Terry Bollea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That song was great. In fact, most of the soundtrack...
What?
Most of the soundtrack and score was pretty great.
This music is so much worse than the music in Surf Ninjas, which is not that great itself.
Oh, man. I think your definition of great music and my definition of great music is off.
I just want some extreme / Mr. Big style guitar riffs.
It just fit this movie so perfectly because it's so, like, weird and wacky, and it's just like a goofy-ass movie to begin with that the music goes along with that, and it adds to the goofiness of the movie.
And it's so early 90s hip-hop, too. Like, I mean, you listen to that, and you know instantly
It's like
time period.
They're definitely, like, ripping off, like, Digital Underground or, like, the Fat Boys or, like, some shit like that. You know,
you know they tried to get Tone Loc to record that song for the movie.
Tone Loc was like, nah, man.
Nah. Nah, I got places to be. I got Surf Ninjas
soon. That's a funky Cole Medina going on.
Yeah, Tone Loc won't do it. The Fat Boys won't do it. What's his name? Heavy D won't do it.
Heavy D.
Redhead Kingpin and the FBI won't do it.
Yeah. So we're stuck with, what was his name?
I don't know.
Oh, J-Rock.
J-Rock.
Oh, the J-Rock. Most generic name possible for a rapper. Yeah.
Critically acclaimed J-Rock.
J-Rock and the Hulkster.
Mm-hmm. Together at last.
Burning up another track.
Yeah. Yeah, then,
And the closing credits music, like, is a really bad, like, family-friendly reggae song.
Yeah,
which makes me think there are a lot of movies around this time ended with reggae songs, didn't they?
Yeah, I think reggae was kind of like making a comeback during that time. I think like the Bob Marley thing was kind of big.
I think so. It seems like that is a way that a lot of those movies ended.
Yeah.
Even if they didn't end like that, there was always some reggae song. I mean, you can't find a reggae
song
in a movie
now. Family friendly reggae was really big. It might have just been because of The Little Mermaid and Sebastian, you know?
Yeah, you know, yeah, that might be part of it. Like there was that, and then like the Specials and Fishbone were kind of coming up around that time.
Yeah.
And Cool Runnings.
Yeah, Cool Runnings, and then the whole ska thing kind of popped out.
Oh, like, yeah, and Jimmy Cliff, you know, I can 90s. See clearly now.
UB40 was, I remember that. Well, not like straight reggae. It still had that, like, tendencies.
That song about, the reggae song about the donut lady from Evil Ed.
I don't think that counts.
Well, that was a Swedish reggae song, but it's all the same.
Yeah, it's all the same.
Okay, so you said there were wrestlers that made appearances in this. Who were they?
I think there was only one. There might have been more, but I thought there was more. But the Undertaker was one of the bounty hunters.
Yeah, and he was like, you know, also throwing out his famous one-liners like...
Yeah.
And...
and the classic...
Oh, you love, oh, man, I love that so one. Good.
Yeah, so...
Listeners, you must realize that we are all, like, opening our mouths and no sound comes out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the bounty hunters don't talk, which is actually really cool.
Yeah.
Like, they just kind of, like, communicate by, like, pointing at things and looking at each other, like, and making, grunting. Like... And, like making a grimace and then making, like, a meaner grimace. Yeah. And then that's basically how they communicate. And, yeah, the Undertaker is one of them.
Oh, and the other one is just some guy? Why isn't it two wrestlers?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the other one was... Like, I thought that the other one was a wrestler coming into it, but... Looking at him now, I didn't look familiar.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him. I mean, maybe he was a, I don't know, small-time guy. I don't know.
It's an actor. His name's Tony Longo.
Tony Longo.
He isn't even a stuntman, whereas a lot of the minor actors in this are stuntmen for whatever reason, including those IndyCar guys who keep bullying Christopher Lloyd.
Really? They were stuntmen.
Well, the main guy was a guy who has played a hillbilly in about a million things. I looked at his IMDb, and he's played a character named Bubba 3 times.
I was gonna say, I think I've seen him in other movies before.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah,
but the other guys,
and he played a character named Hatfield McCoy on The Fresh Prince, which I would like to see that episode.
Hatfield McCoy.
Yeah, and so this is like a weird casting. A lot of stuntmen. The director of this movie was about 70 at the time, and he had directed about 50 westerns at this time, and hardly anything else.
He was like, it's time to change it up.
Yeah,
so he directed some pretty well-known westerns in the 60s, like Support Your Local Sheriff and Dirty Dingus McGee.
Dirty Dingus McGee.
And then he kind of did nothing for the entire 80s except 2 TV movies starring Ned Beatty. And then this, and then I don't know if he died or what, but I don't know. It's weird to imagine an old, like, grizzled, crusty guy directing this.
Maybe he's doing it for the cash. Maybe his kids or his grandkids really liked Hulk Hogan.
Maybe those were all his grandkids, the kids who just appear in the middle of the street and yell at Hulk Hogan.
That might be a possibility.
Might be it.
Yeah. So down the line, Hulkster Shep Ramsey crashes his, or I guess he lands it, kind of.
Yeah, he lands it pretty carefully because it's hovering over this tiny, tiny building, and then it suddenly drops.
It's a disco. It's that sudden drop, though, that really gets you.
Yeah, it's a disco, and it's aptly named the landing pad, as you can tell from the sign that's outside, which was a nice little touch.
Yeah. Although I'm surprised his ship didn't crash on, like, a bunch of squatters. I mean, this is California in the 90s. There's no way there weren't, like, a group of 17-year-olds. Yeah. Just like...
Yeah, gutter punks should have been in there.
Yeah, there is the requisite scene where he walks down the street and is accosted by all the California stereotypes.
Yeah, and
just
he's
like
also
in Captain America and the Dancing Outlaw.
Yep.
And you knew it was California too, because people like were like, "Oh, that's kind of unusual," but like kind of took it in stride. Like, you know, if this had been on the East Coast, people would be flipping shit. But
yeah,
California, like, that's kind of neat. You got like a, what's that, like a metal glove or something? Oh, all right, yeah, cool, man. You don't shop on the, you don't buy off the rack, do you, man?
Yeah, they basically just make fun of him, and he's like, "What?" I'm Hulk, man. Leave me alone.
Fortunately, unlike the Terminator, I am still wearing my clothes, so I don't need to steal any.
This is true. Yeah, but he didn't come through a time portal.
But he does steal some clothes just because.
Yeah, well, that guy was being a dick to a dog.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
The Hulkster loves dogs.
Yeah.
Because he has the consistency of a hot dog for his skin.
Yeah, he's got leather hot dog skin. Hulk, if you were a hot dog, would you eat yourself?
I think we all know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we're introduced to, I'm just going to, Christopher Lloyd. I want to call him to Rick Moranis every single time. But Christopher Lloyd, the inventor, who is basically, and his wife, Shelley Duvall, and they're kind of wacky. They're not really very wacky. I guess they're supposed to be. And he's an inventor. And
I think he's just supposed to be like kind of like the weakling guy.
Yeah.
I don't really get why he had to have, like, the shop. That was a little weird.
Yeah.
Like, that was, like, something that wasn't needed or useful at all.
He's an architect. He was like, I'm going to go out in my shop and bang on stuff. Like,
he's puttering.
I've seen architectural drawings.
Yeah, but what the hell was he building or doing? Like, that's the part that didn't make sense to me.
Well, nothing.
He should have been
anymore.
Like, I'm going to go to my drawing board and draw cartoons or something. Like, that would have been a more...
It would have at least made sense.
Yeah.
And he has, like, this work shed. You see it in, like, the first scene with the hip-hop music. and he goes to work. And he comes back, and Shelley Duvall has completely changed his shed in like the 8 hours he was at work into a completely fully furnished apartment.
They're having money troubles because he can't ask for a raise.
Yeah,
so she just goes ahead and spends thousands and thousands of dollars on completely furnishing this shed into a furnished apartment.
Well, I mean, they didn't necessarily have to spend thousands. They might have had an extra bedroom set up in the house or something.
Yeah,
and they just move shit out there.
You know, I just assume that Shelley Duvall, just like her characters, just are the same character she's been playing. So I just assume that she's coming off of her now disintegrated marriage to Jack Nicholson. And she's, you know, settling down with a safer, nicer guy. And I'm sure she got some money from that. And, you know, I assume that's why she takes everything in stride.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, look, I've seen real crazy. I don't really care anymore. Yeah, yeah.
After that experience.
Had enough of that hotel life.
Yeah, like, I'm just trying to settle down.
Yeah. Yeah, so they rent the apartment, and then somehow Shep Ramsey's walking down the street and sees a sign that says apartment for rent with an arrow. Just takes it off the pole and just walks that way. And somehow, there's no address on this, there's no phone number, he finds their house.
Yeah, yep. Right.
Just by, I guess he knows exactly where that arrow's pointing. I guess.
Yeah, that, or he just like knocked on every single door in the neighborhood.
That's the other option. He just knocks. Is your apartment for rent?
Can I live here?
Well, the arrow had a homing beacon.
Can I live
on
in your house?
That was one of many like ridiculous plot holes or whatever you
many
want to
signs
call it.
That this was not based on true events.
Yes.
So he just shows up and says, I'm going to rent your room. And then Christopher Lloyd worries for a little while. He says, I've got this big, huge guy out there. He's probably trouble. And then he spies on him. And then he starts saying, I've got Darth Vader out there. He's probably trouble.
Yeah, it's funny that they make the Darth Vader reference, because there's a lot of Star Wars things going on, especially early on in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. But, when they're actually when they're actually in space, yeah.
Yeah, when they're actually in space.
Nice.
Yeah, so then after he moves in, we get a lot of little, like, I guess funny moments of...
I guess they're funny. I would... Yeah.
There were some that were funny, some that were like...
There's like for like a half around. An hour, he's just like the suburban justice crusader
Commando?
Guy. He wanders around and sees bullies, and he like says, stop bullying, and they get scared. And then he like encounters random people and mistakes what they're doing and messes up their lives. Almost Mr. Bean style.
Yeah, he basically goes around and is like, oh, what are you Earth people doing? And then he tries it and then messes up, and it's kind of funny. Like, the skateboarding thing happens where a bunch of kids come up with a skateboard, and he's like, I could try that. And he tries it, and he falls on his ass.
And then
the kids make fun of him, and then he gets pissed off, and he throws a skateboard into space.
Yep, into space. The bounty hunters see it in their little jalopy spaceship.
Yep.
And that's actually true. That happens all the time. Like,
yeah.
There are a lot of spaceports.
That's what they're called.
Well, they're called spaceports once they get up there.
Yeah,
and the way they get up there is because the Hulk throws them into the air.
Yeah, it's not called a skateboard. If you're surfing on it, it's a surfboard.
Yeah.
The Silver Surfer should be called the Silver Spacer because he's on a spaceboard.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he encounters the skateboard kids. This is all in the middle of the night, by the way.
Yeah.
He encounters these kids at the arcade in the middle of the night, which was a pretty funny scene because
it's really close to like Rape Alley.
That's right. He goes to Rape Alley, where a woman is having her bag snatched, and he pursues the bag snatcher and brings him back and enacts justice all over his ass.
Yeah. I think he was out jogging, because he never stopped moving when he was like retrieving that, which was kind of funny.
They jog on his planet.
Yeah. They call it yogging, though. It's a soft J. So he was out yogging, and then he saved the... this lady's purse, and throws the bad dude just in a trash can.
Yeah, in the words of Jessica White, he was running like he was jogging for exercise.
Oh man, that was good.
Yeah. Meanwhile, so talk about the arcade scene, because I think that's like kind of the centerpiece of all his interactions with kids.
Yeah, that was pretty good. He runs up and he's basically in the arcade, and there's this kid playing. I don't know what kind of game. It's like a fighting game.
Yeah, it's like one of those, you know, flight simulator arcade style games, like
almost
a Top
like a,
Gun type thing.
I was going to say like a better version of Top Gun.
Yeah.
Because that Top Gun game was hard as hell.
Yeah.
So some kids like saying, oh, this guy, I forget what he called him. We'll call him General Grievous. General Grievous no one can stop General Grievous, and he's fighting.
Oh,
he's like,
Dragos.
Dragos. That was close.
Yeah, so Hulk Hogan just shows up and immediately starts playing the game
because
he thinks the kid is actually like fighting enemy forces.
Yeah, like a drone or something. You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Hulk Hogan manages to beat the game, and everyone cheers.
Yeah.
And then he's just shouting maniacally, give it up, Dragos. You're not going to win, Dragos.
Give it up, Dragos.
Give it up.
Give it up, Dragos. And the best part is like, while he's doing this, the game is like sparking and like... smoke and fires coming out, and when he finally beats him, like a window or a door like pops open on the arcade cabinet,
and a little white
flag comes out.
A boxing glove comes out and wipes the game's brow because it's getting so hot.
Yeah. that part was funny.
And then he just wanders off and runs into a mime for the third time.
Yeah, that got old.
Yeah, there's a gutter mime. California is lousy with gutter mimes. There's like a mime on the street. He's also like adjacent from this Rape Alley.
Yeah.
Just kind of like miming next to
I guess he's practicing. Because he's a street performer, but it's the middle of the night.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess,
and he's in an alley full of cardboard boxes that have graffiti all over them. Nobody has ever graffitied a cardboard box.
You haven't been to some sketchy areas, Mike.
Good graffiti things that aren't just going to get thrown away the next day.
Well,
right?
sometimes you need to practice graffiti, and you just do it on a box.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
that all tracks.
Yeah.
But yeah, this gutter mime bit, I mean, it's kind of funny at first, but it's also just out of place because it's like, all right, well, what is it, like midnight? There's a mime outside doing this, and I guess there's kids at the arcade, so like, what fucking state is this?
Maybe they live in, maybe it's like California, Alaska, where it's like 30 days of night.
I think that's it. They're in northern Alaska.
Yeah.
And it's actually like midday, but it's still dark.
Yeah. Like, the thing that I didn't like about the mime thing is that it happens three times, and it all happens within like a 15-minute span.
Yeah.
Like, if they would have done like the first one when he first got out of the spaceship, maybe something in the middle, and then maybe at the end for the third one, it would have been funny. But it was just like, oh, there's that mime again. We know exactly. You know what I mean? It doesn't give you enough time to be like, oh, yeah, I forgot about the mime. Like, it was always like, oh, yeah, that mime was just here.
I feel like there are a lot of running gags in this, and all of them are done the wrong way. Like, the one with the skateboard kids, where that happens like, he encounters them two times, like over an hour apart.
Yeah,
and there's the thing where he encounters the little girl played by Mad Men's Peggy Olson, Elizabeth Moss, and he does that twice as well. But he, I don't know. If he gets a running bit, you should do it three times.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that the space and time thing is definitely important to that running gag thing as well.
Yeah.
And I think they missed those opportunities as well. I don't know if that's a fault of editing or if it's just a fault of writing.
Yeah. And I think there's supposed to be this other running gag where Christopher Lloyd gets really mad at the red light that he stops at every day.
Yeah.
So at the end of the movie, he shoots the red light with a gun.
Yeah, that was ridiculous, whole shooting it. But that was one of the few...
That's how it works in traffic. Yeah. Like, you're free, cars. Do what you want. Yeah. I've stopped this tyrant.
But then the other cars start...
Can't tell you where to go.
That was one of the few gags that kind of worked, though, because it was a little bit spaced out a little bit. But yeah, the way they handled it was ridiculous.
Yeah. And it could have used a third scene of him drag racing with those elderly people.
Well, I think they did three, but I think two of them were like... It was very front loaded. Like, one happened right off the bat, and another one happened like maybe 15, 20 minutes later. Yeah. And then the last one didn't happen until the end.
Yeah, I did not get the impression that that was something that like he was really annoyed by. Like, they didn't spend enough time on him being annoyed by that.
Yeah, I think they showed that scene enough, but they didn't show his reaction enough, was I think what it was. Or maybe like if he got home and he's like, I missed that goddamn light again.
Yeah,
get off of me with your share hair.
Or if he was like late to work or something and Larry Miller like reamed him out for it.
Yeah, that would have been a good gag too.
That's right. Yeah. So there wasn't enough Larry Miller as well as not enough of the kids.
There really was not enough Larry Miller.
No.
And because I love Larry Miller so
crowd
much.
Favorite.
I was so
crowd
happy
favorite
to see
Larry
him.
Miller.
But,
yeah. Well.
he will be forever a crowd favorite.
Always.
Yeah.
He's always the favorite in my heart.
So he's the boss, and he's your typical boss trying to take credit for the guy's work, you know. Buttering up his business associates while actually being a total fraud. Sucking up to the Japanese.
Yeah, total...
Super fast talking.
Total try-hard, like, schmoozer, you know. He talks a lot. He's your basic boss asshole, you know, like... But Christmas Vacation had this with...
Exactly.
Their guy.
It's exactly the same
bonus.
Thing from Christmas Vacation.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of that, probably, in this, especially in that era of comedy movies.
So I mean, yeah,
that was
he's
a big
like
thing. No one was getting raises then.
Yeah, well, we were getting. Well, the Japanese were going to destroy our economy by being so great.
Goddamn Japanese,
Jesus.
Yes. So it was kind of. There's a funny moment when the boss runs into the Japanese guys who show up at his office, and the Japanese guy says, "I have the feeling I'm going to hate this guy."
That was a good one
in Japanese.
That was a good line. I like that.
I like when his interpreter, like, you know, says something nice, which is always the running joke they always do. But I like that the businessman countered it. Or like, coward, you should have said what I told you.
That's not what I said. That's not what I said.
I wish I knew English so I could say it to him for real.
I'm trying to establish dominance here.
Yeah, I kept thinking that, like, towards the end of this movie, when the Japanese, like, after all that kind of shit came out, that they were going to be like, I knew you were like, they were going to speak English, and that would be a gag. But that didn't happen.
No way, but he didn't. But the boss didn't say anything bad about the Japanese. So.
No. But I was just like, I get the feeling that the Japanese could read that he was like a phony. So it would have been funny if they spoke English the whole time,
well,
but they didn't
lead
on, and then they called him on his shit like at the end when he didn't know what he was doing. Like, I thought that would have been funny.
And it's kind of funny how as soon as the Japanese showed up, they were just with the boss the entire time. Whenever we saw him, yeah. he was always talking to the Japanese. Like, they were having a multi-day, non-stop bargaining session.
Yep.
Yeah. That just means that Larry Miller was on set for about 3 days, and those Japanese people needed to be there the whole time.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
And what was the deal with those crystals?
Yeah, that was
What's
a little
weird. What's the deal with crystals?
Yeah.
Funny Larry Miller thing. Larry Miller played a bellhop in a Seinfeld episode.
Oh, the connections.
Suppose yeah. the bellhop wouldn't be interested in that.
Or a doorman, not a bellhop. Doorman.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, the Different doorman union. Certainly has some wild ideas, doesn't he?
Oh, man. But yeah, so the crystals were, I guess they were like architecture awards that Larry Miller won, but I'm assuming that other architects really won because he just slaps his name on other architects.
Yeah, they look like conflict drawings. Diamonds to me.
Yeah, but. They're a little blood diamond-y.
So apparently his architecture awards are made out of the same dilithium crystals that Hulk Hogan needs to power his spaceship.
Yeah, there's something with an S, selenium, serenium,
serenity
crystals.
Serenity now crystals.
Simonization crystals.
Saline crystals.
Splenda crystals.
Splenda crystals.
Solenoid.
Solenoid crystals.
Spanakopita crystals. Something with an S.
Yeah, some.
No big deal. Not integral to the movie at all.
At all.
Other than he needs these crystals to power his ship.
So yeah. kind of.
But for most of the movie, his ship isn't broken. He just needs to power it a tiny bit, and then he can fly away again.
Yeah, and he gets frustrated and, like, I don't know what he did. I don't even know if he did anything, but he maybe punched it or something. But yeah. somehow the engine, like, blew up.
That's, like, a leitmotif of this movie. The Hulk getting frustrated and hitting yeah. something. Also, a leitmotif of his life.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There was
too soon.
There was a director's cut of this movie where there was a sex scene with Hulk Hogan.
Oh, no. It wasn't him and Shelley Duvall, was it?
I think so.
But
somehow
no.
it ended up on the cutting room floor, and I think some site named Gawker got a hold of it or something. I don't know.
It seems like it's a big thing now,
Hulkster got the last laugh.
Christopher Lloyd is Rick Moranis in the Bubba the Love Sponge story.
Suburban anal plug.
Yes, exactly. So, who else is in this movie? There's two criminals. And
one of the main ways
you can tell this is a kids movie is because there are two criminals and they are the same two guys who both rob the bank and drag women into alleys to rape them. They're the same criminals in both cases.
And see, they're really unfocused, which makes you realize it's a kids movie because they're like, yeah, we got this woman. Let's kind of just drag her around a lot. Yeah,
they're just dragging her around and she's going, help, help. And they're just dragging her around. And
they're not really taking her anywhere.
Yeah, they're not trying to steal anything from her. They're not holding her for ransom.
And they can't, this is a kids movie. They can't,
That's right.
They were going to rape her.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they were going to do. Like, because the scene kind of goes on for a lot longer than I think
it
should have.
Yeah, they're just not very good at it.
So it's just, like, really unfocused. And as a kid, I guess you think, well, they're abducting her or something.
They're stealing her purse a whole lot there.
But they're just not doing stealing from her.
No, they're not.
To an adult, they're clearly just rapists. And Rick Moranis, or Christopher Lloyd, spends a lot of time, like, fiddling around with Hulk Hogan's space armor before he figures out how to stop the rapists. And it's a very tense situation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They drag her near this, like, burning trash can, and then they drag her away from the burning trash can to, like, another pile of stuff.
Yeah.
And then they shoot
Christopher Lloyd, and he's like, oh, they tease him with, like, oh, can that thing stop bullets? And he's like, wait, no, I don't know.
I don't know. Wait a minute, folks. I'm bailing out now.
Which was pretty funny. And then they shoot him. And then,
I'm officially in over my head. Yeah. I'm not sure how this is going to work out.
Good luck, lady.
I'd like to bow out.
But then it turns out the bullet was indeed stopped by his armor.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and he's all like, I'm Darth Vader, an extraterrestrial from the planet Krypton. And he stop that, like, woman. I have the strength of 10.
He does.
But then
a
he
jet
falls down.
Jump. Yeah, he does like a jet jump and falls on them.
Yep.
But he did not control that jet jump at all. Am I right?
No.
He could just easily crush the woman.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I'm pretty sure she got hurt. Yeah. So then during this process, he loses one of Shep's guns that were attached to his leg or something.
Right. Yeah.
And then this becomes a homing beacon for the bounty hunters. I guess if a piece of his suit or a piece of his ship is turned on past a certain amount of power, they can track him down. So that happens. And then the bounty hunters get to Earth. And surprise, surprise, the bad dudes find this gun on the ground. Mm. And then they like, hey, we got this gun. Let's rob a bank, you know? Logical.
Yeah, why not?
And then this is where we find out that the gun is a freeze gun. Much like Mr. Freeze from Batman. It just freezes people.
Yeah.
They don't die. They just freeze for a while.
It stops their motion, and it freezes them, like, makes them cold.
Yeah,
but it's not.
Yeah.
It doesn't harm them. Actually, freezing them would harm them, but this is somehow doing both of those things without doing the other thing.
Yeah, Shep says he'll be like that for about 20 minutes, and then he'll have a really bad headache, is basically the conditions of this freeze gun. But the surprise to the bank robbery scene is as the Hulkster's breaking up the robbery, the bounty hunters bust through
Hulkster
the walls.
Typical Hulkster fashion.
Yeah. The bounty hunters break through the walls, and this starts fight scene number whatever. Basically, this fight scene lasts throughout the end of the movie because it goes back and forth.
Yeah, it's basically just like one running fight scene with a couple of dialogue points in there. Mm-hmm. Also, I guess how they find the bank and the bank robbery, this is where that PKE meter comes in. Because looking around for this gun that, you know, Christopher Lloyd lost, and, you know, the Hulkster's all angry about how it's lost, and, you know, he's about to Hulk out on somebody. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, you know, I know how we can find it. And he reaches into Christopher Lloyd's car and pulls out the PKE meter and is like, oh, we can use this. It's like a homing device. It's going to track it.
No, I don't think Daryl stresses enough. Now, Christopher Lloyd got up this morning, went to work, was going about his business, and the Hulkster comes and rips him out of work.
Yeah.
To track down this gun.
That's right.
Now, the Hulkster opens up Christopher Lloyd's glove box, who's been at work the whole day, and finds this detecting device. He's like, oh, yeah, let me just pull this out. And then Christopher Lloyd's like, why didn't we just do that in the first place? And Hulkster shoots him a stare, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, the Hulkster gets sarcastic a lot in this movie.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, he gets sassy.
He's like
downright sassy.
Yeah. You've been a big help, Charlie. Now, if you don't mind, I'll go do this work myself.
He comes from Planet Sarcasy.
But it's funny, we didn't hear anything about his home planet. I thought he was going to be wistful or something.
Yeah.
But we don't hear anything about that at all. He's just like an intergalactic guy.
He's just a dude.
His home
space.
Is the hell in the cell. That's where he lives.
Oh, yeah. Well, you wouldn't want to reminisce about that.
Oh,
nah.
Oh, and another funny little thing about that freeze gun before we jump on to something else. Yeah. So the Hulkster, the bad dude spray Christopher Lloyd, and he's frozen. And then he turns the gun on the Hulkster, and the Hulkster, we're like, oh, shit, it's done. The Hulkster's frozen. But no, the Hulkster starts chugging this like mouthwash-looking stuff. And then the bad dude stops shooting him, and the Hulkster's like, antifreeze.
Well, he like wipes his mouth away with the entire
arm. He just shouted
arm.
Antifreeze.
Yeah, he just grunted and shouted antifreeze.
Antifreeze.
But it sounded like he was like shocked and disappointed when he was saying that.
Oh, man.
But actually, he was explaining how he defeated the freeze ray.
Yes.
No, I think that's how all people react after they've just drunk some antifreeze.
Yeah, I think so.
Shocked and disappointed.
Well, I've heard that antifreeze tastes great. You know, raccoons are always killing themselves drinking it.
Yeah, well, raccoons can't handle their antifreeze.
I'm like shocked by the amount of crystals forming in my brain, and I'm disappointed at the taste.
Well, they're much like a raccoon, these criminals like to wear black and white masks on their faces, and these criminals then go to Surfer Burger.
Yeah.
Which...
Well, not the criminals. These are the bounty hunters that go to Surfer Burger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't talk, so they go to like a drive-thru, and the drive-thru's like, welcome to Surfer Burger, bro. And they can't order anything, so they just get annoyed and shoot the Surfer Burger guy.
We got the dude also burger, we got the Surfer Burger, we got the Hang 10 Burger.
Yeah, I think this is where the Surf Ninjas, I think this is the dad's restaurant.
Oh, yeah. This is all in canon.
Yeah.
By dad, you mean their actual dad, the king's faithful retainer and servant.
Yeah.
What's his name? Willie or something.
Uncle Bill, whatever his name was.
Yeah.
There's like so many, there's people listening who are like, oh my God, I really got to get back on the back catalog of this stuff.
I got to
do my research.
Yeah, we're doing all sorts of deep references on this one.
Yeah. I'm realizing that a lot of these movies, a lot of these things started making me think, we've seen this three times in a movie so far.
Yeah, we're doing some deep crate digging tonight.
Like scene where the guy is walking around in Southern California and sees girls in bikinis and rollerblades and stuff. That happens all the time.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is the 90s.
But at the end of the movie where the Hulkster is in that disco club again, and General Souter shows up, and he finally kills General Souter by impaling him on an electric wall. Which, how many times have we seen that before? Definitely hardware.
At least a million.
Yeah. At least.
It's one of those hardware walls where if you just throw your enemy at it, he's stuck forever.
Yeah, it actually kind of happened in Surf Ninjas, too, because they threw a General Claw into the
water.
General Leslie Nielsen, too.
Yeah.
General Leslie Nielsen.
Then,
I'm sure he'd like...
His name wasn't General Claw.
Yeah, well, it was something Claw.
It was an Asian name. I remember that. Yeah. General Chu or General Chow or something.
Whatever, you got the point. You knew who I was talking about.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I feel like that's at least happened now in at least three movies.
At least.
And I'm thinking possibly a couple more.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the trends are coming around to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
We've seen Larry Miller in at least two movies.
Yeah.
You know, I was very disappointed to see that Larry Miller did not have that tome with his face on it.
Yeah. He had such a fancy office in this. I was hoping that he would just sneak that book with his face on it onto the set of every movie.
I wouldn't have left the set without taking that.
Yeah.
I'm sure he didn't. I'm sure it's somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, so before we missed one thing that was pretty funny. When the fight was happening with General Suter, Christopher Lloyd throws on the super armor like glove thing.
Yeah,
like that a power glove.
Yeah.
And
power glove?
Yeah, power glove. Uh-huh. And General Suter's got him in like a chokehold, and then he arms this and you expect him maybe to punch him or something, but no, he goes straight up nut crunch.
Not pneumatic fist crunch.
But the thing is, I was thinking that would not even faze General Suter because he's not a human.
But the best part is that it turns him into Swamp Thing Predator guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just decides, okay, I'm done toying with you.
Yeah. Which I'm guessing that he ripped it off because when he was Swamp Thing Predator guy, there was no genitalia at all.
Yeah, there was
nothing down
there.
The first time he turned into the Swamp Thing when the guy ripped his hand off, and this time it was when Christopher Lloyd ripped his ball sack off.
Yeah, well, I don't think he turned full Swamp Thing on the first one. I think it was just his hand.
Yeah, you got to rip the whole nuts off to go full Swamp Thing.
Yeah,
yeah, that's the only way he can become enraged enough to do that.
We're going to call him Swamp Predator.
He goes Super Saiyan.
Swamp Predator.
Yeah, you only go full Swamp Predator if your balls get crushed.
Yeah,
that is what happens, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to most guys.
Yeah.
You get a little Swamp Predator-y.
Yeah, it's yeah. Yeah, we all know the feeling.
No, maybe just you, actually. Just you and General Grievous.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so this is happening during the final... The final confrontation is both in this disco place, or was it in Christopher Lloyd's garage, or was it just in the disco place?
That was in a disco joint. Yeah.
Yeah, so it starts in the architecture firm where Larry Miller is having a big party to honor his Japanese guests.
Yeah, and Hulkster beats up the... this is where the bounty hunter fight happens.
Yeah.
And some funny things happen with that.
Miller's secretary gets super splooshified for Hulk Hogan as soon as she meets him.
Oh,
yeah,
super she does. Sploosh.
Yeah, and then we have the cool scene that you mentioned earlier, Mike, with the rebar. Where they have like this like pissing contest where they find this piece of rebar and they just start bending it.
Yeah,
and then
right.
The other guy unbends it. And then Hulk Hogan takes it out and it's a bunny rabbit when he bends it.
What Warner Brothers cartoon character would do that?
Bugs Bunny.
Bugs Bunny probably.
Bugs Bunny isn't strong.
Yeah, but he could figure that out. It would probably be with like balloon animals or something, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the stuff that Hulk Hogan does in this did remind me of Bugs Bunny. Like when he like walked up to the mime, I was almost thinking he was saying, "Oh, hi, Mac. I'm going to help you with that."
Helps
him climb the invisible ladder.
He's in a running for best Bugs Bunny impression with Donald Sutherland.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got some stiff competition.
One of the other movies that this director made when he was in his 70s starred Ned Beatty and Donald Sutherland. So I hope we can watch that next.
All right.
Yeah, so one of the alien bounty hunters bends this bar of steel, and he looks at Hulk Hogan and goes, "Eh? Eh?" And he hands it to his buddy, and then the buddy bends it back to go straight.
Yeah.
And then you think he's going to hit Hulk Hogan with it, and he just hands it back to Hulk Hogan for some reason.
Yeah. It's like, no, you do one.
The dumbest
move
ever.
Yeah, exactly. You do one.
It's so dumb.
Well, let's see what you got.
Oh,
come on, impress me.
Yeah. Yeah. So then there's a whole bunch of fighting and the Undertaker gets like bashed through like thousands of floors in this house.
Yeah. Like the death defying like toss through the ceiling that propels him through multiple floors
and multiple toilets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Multiple toilets. And then he ends up on the top floor, comes out of the toilet and gets in an elevator, I guess, because Hulk Hogan and the other bounty hunter are fighting. And then the elevator's coming down at a fast speed. And Hulk Hogan, I don't know if he pushed him or he just left him in there, but this elevator crushes the bounty hunter guy.
Yeah.
And then Undertaker pops out with a toilet on his head. And then he says his only line, and it's like, he goes, "I'll get you,
You're Shep a dead Ramsey. Man, Ramsey.
Yeah, you're a dead man, Ramsey. And it sounds like a little kid, and it's hilarious. It sounds like Undertaker was like huffing some helium.
And then the Hulkster does a Roger Moore style quip. He's like, "Well, that's why you guys never talk, eh?"
Yep. Oh. In your face, Bounty Hunter.
Which oh, I wish man. Roger Moore had been cast in this movie instead of Hulk Hogan. Oh, imagine the greatness that would be.
I mean, well, you know, this movie was already recast once.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, the sky's the limit. Let's see all the people we'd like to see.
Oh,
in this
yeah.
Movie.
Would you rather have Danny DeVito or Christopher Lloyd in the Rick Moranis role?
I think Danny DeVito would have been really funny in that role.
Because, I mean, I love me some Christopher Lloyd, yeah. But I think Danny DeVito would have just been a...
It would have been less angry. It would have been less, like, it would have been more comical, I think.
Yeah. And I don't know. Shelley Duvall... No, you don't replace Shelley Duvall.
No, once
you got Shelley Duvall, you just stick with it.
Yeah.
You can replace Shelley Duvall with Popeye. Whoever Danny DeVito's wife was in the movie Twins. That's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's about it.
That's about
the
it.
The movie kind of ends.
No Bechdel test. Not even close.
Nope.
No.
I don't even think any of the... no. Were
I don't even think the child talked to the mom. Yeah,
no, there's that so. Lady who was selling bananas while wearing an Afghan. That's a woman.
Yeah. There was the elderly woman who Hulkster crushed a melon into her face.
Oh, yeah, that's the same one I was thinking of.
Oh, okay.
Because I noticed that at her fruit stand, there was a sign saying, bananas, 5 cents a pound.
Yeah.
And this puzzled me, because isn't that more than bananas cost now?
No, I think it's at 59 cents. And I think it was just like a bunch. No, usually bananas now are about like 59 cents a pound.
Yeah. Okay, well, listeners, if you have a reason why this... banana sign would have been written this way, or was there a sudden spike in banana prices around this time?
Oh yeah, the great banana famine of 1991.
Bananarama famine.
Yeah, people were wearing too many geranimals and listening to too much Bananarama.
Yeah, maybe like Bananarama was so popular a little bit ago that it forced the sale, like supply and demand of bananas went way up.
I don't know. I think at this point Bananarama had been pretty much replaced by the Go-Go's.
Well,
I mean, you know,
residual Bananarama fan.
And the Bangles, or the Banana Wrangles, as they were originally known.
You have to think, you know,
what?
Eastern Europe is just getting this. Like Bananarama, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Where's this been all my life? Oh, wait, I know. On the other side of the curtain, I couldn't go on the other side of. Great.
Oh, man. Yeah, so outside of that, there was I have one thing that I thought was funny that we didn't cover was there's the guys next door to Christopher Lloyd. They have like all these racing cars and drag cars.
Oh, that's right,
like
yeah.
That. And it's always a thing where they're blocking his driveway. So Hulkster sees this and he's talking to Colonel Dusty, the neighbor, who has a very small part, which doesn't make sense really,
but
he's there anyway.
All of it's great. I like it.
It was fun.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that character. He was cool.
Yeah,
he just sits out in his front lawn in a tank all day.
Yeah, it's like a couple of characters from like The Burbs, you know, what I mean? Where they just like hang out and comment on things.
Yeah, quirky suburbia.
yeah. And then so Hulkster sees this and is like, oh, I got this, and picks up one of the dragsters and just pushes it out of the way. And the guys get all pissed, like, hey, what are you doing? And Hulkster's like, oh, let me guess, you're gonna beat me up and spit down my throat and puke on my face and drag
me
somewhere.
Along a gravel road and feed me to a warthog. That was very specific.
That was awesome. And then they're like, no, man, this is the 90s. We're just going to sue you.
They're like, we're going to get you for damage of property. Yeah. We're going to get you for emotional distress. We're going to get you for lost wages. Yeah. You're going to be talking to our lawyer, pal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing ever comes of that, so whatever.
What kind of cars were those? You would know.
They were like racing cars, like not NASCAR cars. But
they were really pointy cars.
Yeah, and then those were just like drag racing, like hot rods and stuff like that.
I think the joke was that like a new one appeared every day, making it harder and harder for Christopher Lloyd to get into his own driveway as the guys sat there in wife beaters laughing at him.
And we failed to mention that Christopher Lloyd was testing a gun that he found in Hulkster's bed and shoots it through the wall and it lights one of these on fire. And these guys never say anything about it.
No.
They're just like, well, I guess shit just blew up.
You win some, you lose some.
Yeah. We got plenty more of these.
Yeah.
Good thing we got nine.
Yeah. So that whole thing was kind of ridiculous. There was a lot of stuff in this that didn't make sense.
Nah.
But it didn't matter. It was still ridiculously fun.
Exactly. You know, when the Hulkster's there, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Give it up, Dragos. Give it up. Give it up. Give it up, Dragos. Give it up. Give it up, Dragos.
You did it! You just saved the galaxy! Yeah!
us play this game a lot.
Game?